Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I'm an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com. Based in New York, on the other line in Los Angeles, is the Connecticut Huskies of the chart world. Keith Caulfield, how's it going, Keith?
I'm good. I think that's a good reference.
You're a champ. You're a champ right now.
Awesome.
You're a March Madness winner. I'll say that about you. So congrats on that. That's great to hear.
Thanks.
So today, Keith, is a very special episode of the Pop Shop Podcast. We will be talking summer festivals with our special guests, Billboard.com's Jessica Letkeman, Billboard.com's Chris Payne, and Billboard's Alex Gale. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
Yes.
All right, indeed. We were talking about Coachella, which kicks off this weekend, the headliners at that festival and other announced festivals, and what we're most looking forward to this summer. It's almost summertime, guys. I'm excited to go to some festivals this year. But first, let's quickly turn to the chart world. And Keith, we're 5 seconds of summer. We talked about it briefly last week, but they do indeed have a major debut on the Billboard 200 chart. Keith, you want to quickly fill us in?
Yeah, speaking of summer festivals, the summer starts in earnest with 5 seconds. I don't know why I'm talking like that. 5 seconds of Summer, the Australian pop rock band, debuts at number 2 on the Billboard 200 chart with their EP She Looks So Perfect. It sold 143,000 copies, but it can't beat out that darn Frozen soundtrack, which is number 1 for the 9th week. Not in a row, but you know, still 9th week, pretty awesome. It sold 149,000 copies. So close, but no cigar for 5 seconds of Summer.
So again, this 5 Seconds of Summer EP sells over 140,000 copies. To give you know, the listener some perspective, that's more than Ariana Grande's album sold in its first week. That's more than Selena Gomez's album sold in its first week. Who are 5 Seconds of Summer to people who might not know who they are, and how did they get so big so quickly?
Well, there's this band called One Direction.
Ah.
See, and it all makes sense.
Ah.
Ta-da.
Tell us more, Keith.
So 5 Seconds of Summer is this Australian pop rock band that became popular on YouTube like a couple years ago. It's a baby band, and they're completely sort of YouTube-driven, essentially. And they somehow got hooked up with One Direction. I'm not exactly sure of the origins of the connection, but they toured with One Direction for most of their arena tour last year. So if you saw One Direction last year and you were there for the opening act, well, that opening act was 5 Seconds of Summer on most of the dates. So that connection with One Direction and their friends with One Direction and all the tweeting and stuff that they're doing back and forth certainly helps raise their profile. And it doesn't hurt that both One Direction and 5 Seconds of Summer are managed by the same management company. Hey, it all makes even more sense now. So, stepping backwards just for 1 second, when you talk about how it sold more than Ariana Grande's album and more than Selena Gomez, do keep in mind that this album is actually just a 4-song EP that only
cost a couple bucks. Right.
So it was super cheap. It's only 4 songs. And, you know, it's hard to compare that to, say, Selena or Ariana or anyone else because it's such a unique effort. So there you go.
But on the other side, they didn't have any radio play. So in some ways it was, you know, although there was a cheaper price, it's still sort of a surprise when you look at just how quickly they sort of came out of nowhere if you weren't paying attention. There were also sold out tours, you know, their U.S. tour, which is, I think, a brief run of about maybe 11 dates.
It starts later this month.
Yeah, it sold out in minutes, supposedly, and, you know, their social numbers have been exploding. And it's really been a worldwide thing because they did open for One Direction on, you know, their massive 2013 world tour. So you've been seeing this not just here, but, you know, in Britain and Australia, really, you know, Europe, Asia, all over. So,
well, this is where we'd like to say that the person speaking is Chris Payne, who actually, I believe, interviewed.
That is not Chris Payne.
Damn it.
People confuse us a lot. You know, this is Alex.
By the way, I'm in Los Angeles, and I haven't seen these faces of people in a while, so I apologize.
It's been a long time, Keith.
I'm going to do my best Alex Gale voice when I come on.
That was Chris Payne.
This is just a podcast of confusion for Keith. So Again, showing the power of One Direction, just their ties, and like you said, not really having any radio for She Looks So Perfect, which is the current single. But Keith, it debuts on the Hot 100 this week, correct?
It does. The title track debuts at number 60 on the Billboard Hot 100 this week, and it actually is already on our mainstream Top 40 Airplay chart, which is known as Pop Songs on Billboard.com. So it's already getting airplay. Though it wasn't getting airplay weeks and weeks ago, there is airplay for the song. So it's not like radio is ignoring it completely. I'm not arguing with anyone. I'm just saying there is airplay. They're kind of taking the model of what One Direction did when One Direction's first album came out, because One Direction didn't go the route of, you know, traditional radio airplay and traditional promotion. They really went straight to the fans and was very social driven, and that really gave them a great first week. And then after that, they built a story for themselves with mainstream radio and mainstream outlets, and which is what 5 Seconds of Summer basically is kind of doing right now.
Right. Well, and one thing is also, you know, Steve Barnett is overseeing them at Capitol, and he's the same person who was responsible for One Direction's U.S. takeover when he was head of Columbia. So that's another interesting parallel.
A lot of ties between them, the label and the management. They're on separate labels, but like you said, Steve Barnett, a common thread. So 5 Seconds of Summer, She Looks So Perfect, the single, debuts on the Hot 100. Also debuting on the Hot 100 this week, Sam Smith with Stay With Me.
The male Adele.
I feel like there's so many of those singers who want to be the male Adele, but Sam Smith's kind of like elbowing out of the way. He had a SNL performance a couple weeks ago, and now Stay With Me is number 68 on the Hot 100.
Yes. It wasn't this past Saturday, but the Saturday before. So this is the first full week of impact that we're seeing from his Saturday Night Live performance. Saturday before last, depending on when you're listening to this. The song he performed, well, one of the two songs he performed, Stay With Me, debuts at number 68. And also a song that he's on with Disclosure, Latch, re-enters at number 90. So he has two songs on the Billboard Hot 100 this week. His EP has a big sales gain as well. That's doing well. And this is all setting up his full-length debut, which comes out, I believe, in June, I think.
Yep.
Yes. And then that's his global debut. It comes out both in the UK and America. He's from the UK, by the way, and he won a Brit Award earlier this year. The name of which escapes me, but I think it's like the Brits sort of Critics' Choice Award, which is kind of like for new and upcoming artists. And
yeah, I think that's like the sound of 2014 or it's something like that. Speaking of male UK singers, Ed Sheeran, who is on the cover of the new Billboard magazine, is back with a new single called Sing. It's produced by Pharrell. Everybody loves this song. What do you guys think of this song?
I think you hit the nail on the head, Jason, when you said that it reminds you a lot of Like I Love You, this song that Pharrell, Neptunes, with Chad did with the Clips back in the day, and with Justin Timberlake, you know, has a lot of that vibe, and I think it should do very well.
It does. I kind of wish the Clips was on it.
That would be cool.
Ed Sheeran featuring the Clips.
That would be a different kind of song entirely.
Wanted to cover Like I Love You, and then we'll just it'll be done with.
So Keith, that is that just came out this past Monday. It's not going to be on this week's Hot 100. Is it looking at a big debut for next week?
Yes, it is. We have sort of preliminary first week sales projections on the song. Now it should do well over 100,000 downloads. That number is a little bit sketchy right now because it's still kind of early on. So that sales plus its strong airplay debut should translate to a nice debut on the Billboard Hot 100 next week. I would assume top 40, top 30-ish, you know, could be higher. It really depends. And also he has a Saturday Night Live performance this coming weekend, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, which will, of course, impact sales likely as well. So there's a lot of good things happening with Mr. Sheeran right now.
You can check out the full cover story along with photos and video and things you didn't know about Ed on Billboard.com right now. So we will keep an eye on Sing. Okay, guys. So let's depart the chart world.
Keith.
I know, Keith, it'll be okay. We'll come back for your charts out of the week. But I want to turn now to our summer festival preview. Thank you guys again for joining us. And, you know, I wanted to do this now because Coachella's kicking off this weekend. You have Outkast and Muse and Arcade Fire as the headliners. And it really does seem like the start of summer festival season, even though it's happening in April, you have most of the big lineups out now. Outside Lands was this past week, but before that, Bonnaroo, Lollapalooza, Sasquatch, Pitchfork, etc. So let's start with Coachella. We know that. Let's actually start with Outkast. Now I can't wait for Outkast, and I know a lot of people who can't wait for Outkast. But how do you think non-fanatics feel? And I'll ask Jess, because you know you're more of a rock fan. How do you feel about Outkast headlining basically every festival?
I love the idea of Outkast headlining a bunch of festivals, because I feel like Outkast is one of those groups that sort of everybody can get behind. You know, like I think everybody's excited to see them. And I think the strategy behind that was that they were thinking like, okay, we're having this big comeback, and how do we do that in a 2014 world? In 2014, you do that live. You know what I mean? And that's going to make the greatest impact. I think they're trying to get in front of as many people as possible. I think we're in our own world. You know, we go to more festivals than the average person, although I know that there's a subset of folks who like rack up those wristbands and wear them through the year proudly. And that's cool too. But I just think that most folks are going to be excited that they will definitely get a chance. Pretty much they will definitely get a chance to see Outkast if they go to a festival this year. And they're one of the groups too. Like, you know, I remember back in the day when they first came out, and rock fans were excited about them too. For example, my favorite band Pearl Jam was totally behind Outkast when they came out in the 90s. But I feel like even, you know, a generation later, you know, like the folks who are in their 20s, early 20s now and late teens are really interested in Outkast as well. So it's an interesting strategy. I think, you know, it looks a little strange that they're going to be at 40 or something festival. I don't remember the number, but you know, on a case by case basis, the people are going to flock to that stage. Absolutely.
I think it's the sort of the case where, you know, these different major festivals want to differentiate from each other, but at the same time, how are you going to say no to Outkast?
100%.
And they're not playing a couple ones. They're not playing Bonnaroo, but yeah, like if you're Firefly, if you're, you know, Lollapalooza, you want one of those days of your festival to be headlined by Outkast. People want that.
Right. I mean, and the other truth about, you know, festivals, you know, that you can't necessarily differentiate that super, super much. Between all the different ones, because, you know, how many gigantic major headlining level acts are touring in a given summer? You have those to choose from. So in 2014, I think we're seeing like the metastasizing of festivals in general. There are so many this year. It feels like 20 times as many as other years. Maybe I'm crazy. But, really, you know, and so how do you find a festival, like a headliner level group that's different than another festival? That's the other challenge that I'm sure that, you know, all the organizers are facing. So, yeah, don't say no to somebody just because they're on somebody else's festivals. You know, maybe it's a little bit samey, but it works.
I think that's another situation where, because we go to so many festivals and, you know, this is our world, that we care more than the average consumer, whereas for them, it depends a lot on where it is, the price, when it is, things like that. Like, most people are not going to multiple festivals like some of us maybe. So, you know, I do think in terms of Outkast, like, if you're going to a festival in 2014 and you're the average person who goes to one, maybe two, you really want to see Outkast, or else you're missing kind of they are the biggest festival story of 2014. And, like, personally, I'm thrilled to see them. And it will be interesting to see how people who were 10 and 11 and maybe even younger when Outkast last put an album, I think in 2003, how they take to them. But at the same time, Outkast is so far ahead of their time. If you look at, you know, the way they blended genres, and they are amazing live. At least they were.
Yeah, we'll see in a couple days.
You know, Big Boy's been touring a lot, so I am expecting them to just, you know, be the big story coming out of all these festivals.
What's been interesting about these lineup announcements is that it almost seems to me that Outkast is almost legitimizing some of these festivals, in terms of, you know, some of these festivals want to grow in stature. And even though Outkast is being booked at a bunch of the major ones, like, you know, like Lollapalooza, like Coachella, like I said, you think of something like the Mad Decent Block Party, you think of something like Hangout Fest in Alabama, like, by having Outkast as a headliner, they're getting the same headliner as one of the major ones. And that, maybe that's why it seems like there are so many this year, is because, you know, the smaller ones keep wanting to get bigger and bigger, and Outkast is helping them do that this year. So, in terms of the other headliners, I wanted to ask how you guys feel about the, Like I said, a lot of the lineups have come out outside lands. You're looking at the Outside Lands festival bill as we speak. Lollapalooza, Bonnaroo, Governor's Ball, Pitchfork. How do you guys feel about this year's crop of headliners?
I mean, I don't think there's much else that's getting us talking a lot aside from Outkast. Granted, it's a lot of conversation about Outkast, but outside of Outkast, it's kind of like, I don't think there's anything terrible that we're just like, oh, we would never want to see this act, but just like, oh, okay. Kings of Leon are headlining another festival. Okay.
Yeah. It does seem very samey this year. And not to say that all of them are the same, but it's just like, it does kind of feel to me too, like Chris said, that like we've seen a lot of these faces before, and it doesn't seem like last year there were a couple artists that graduated to headliner status. It seemed like Mumford and Sons was, you know, going to headline Bonnaroo before one of their members had an illness. Phoenix headlined Coachella. This seems like a lot of like very safe, like aside from Outkast, Foo Fighters, Jack Johnson, Eminem, Kings of Leon. Jess, what do you think?
You know, what I think is interesting, I'm looking at the Coachella lineup and I'm seeing Ellie Goulding sort of on the second tier, not quite a headliner. I really thought like maybe this year somebody would take a chance on her as a headliner. I think that would be a great bet. And if it's not this year, oh, I hope it's next year, because she's ready for it. I saw her completely own Lollapalooza last year, and like not as a headliner, obviously, but like in the afternoon, she like had the crowd in the palm of her hand. Everybody was at, it was at a main stage. She's ready for it. And I feel like, you know, over the last 12 months has been really a huge breakout year for her, and she could own it. She could really like own somebody's festival. And if somebody takes a chance,
I think she needs a couple more years personally, but like, I do agree. I mean, one of the questions I have on here is why does it still seem to me like there's too much of a bias against pop leaning headliners? Like, I don't understand why, you know, Taylor Swift hasn't headlined Bonnaroo yet. I don't understand why Beyonce isn't headlining Lollapalooza. I just don't really get that. Like, you know, you can have the Foo Fighters and the rock artists, but why not mix it up one of those days with, you know, a consensus pop act? What do you guys think?
I wouldn't say, you know, Ellie Goulding's set design or anything is that extravagant, but Lady Gaga, who headlined Lollapalooza just a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was like an awesome, you know, experience.
Yeah, people loved it.
It was. But I wonder, you know, I'm not an expert in like sort of what goes into the production of a festival, but I wonder if that's a consideration, just like the logistics of that and the like scope of it.
Yeah.
And pop tends to do that more than like, say, a rock band who just bring a guitar and maybe rock out.
And maybe that's one of the reasons why mainstream hip hop acts like Kanye, like Jay-Z, have been able to kind of make that leap into, and now Outkast, into the headliner status, but not someone like Beyonce, who might have more stage production.
Although she was at Made in America,
yeah, last year.
And don't forget Kanye, you know, was it
Glow in the Dark tour?
Yes, that was part of the problem. Was maybe a problem, but also was sort of incredible in its own way. But, you know, I think some of this may be economic and that it's hard for festivals. I think one, pop stars make more money and make more of an impact with their own tour as opposed to being in the mix with these groups. I mean, if you see the bigger stars that are performing at festivals, they're kind of like the cool kid stars like Kanye, you know, would be the perfect example, or Arcade Fire. People who are, you know, pop stars, even Arcade Fire is now in some ways, but who still have sort of this indie cred.
Yeah.
So I think it's sort of more of the artist wanting to do that to make a statement rather than something that fits in with their business model as much.
Yeah.
So.
I agree. I think that what we're going to see, though, in the next 5 years is maybe more of an acceptance of, you know, looking at the Coachella lineup, I see someone like Lana Del Rey, who we talked about plenty of times on the podcast, but I see someone like her, like maybe she does have the indie cred while still kind of towing that pop line. Maybe in a couple of years she'll be into like this, not the headliner status, although she might be headlining, I think, Sweet Life Festival. I know she's playing it. I don't know if she's headlining, but maybe, you know, maybe in a couple of years her, maybe Ellie Goulding, someone also with a little bit of indie cred as well. So what do you guys think has the best lineup of 2014 of the ones that have been announced?
I'm really interested in Outside Lands, and that's not something that has traditionally been like super at the top of my radar as a, you know, East Coast person. Lollapalooza's sort of easier kind of thing, but Outside Lands is really interesting.
So who's playing that one?
That's Kanye and Tom Petty, which is really interesting to me.
Oh, Tom Petty.
And I know that you have some Bonnaroo love for that.
That was fun last year.
Don't sleep on Tom Petty. I know that you know he's been around a long time and that kind of stuff, but that's a great live act. And I think that, you know, when a festival reaches back to like a, you know, an artist that can sort of pull in the generations, like sometimes that's a real big win. And I think that people are going to really, really enjoy his set. You know, and I got to tell you, I saw Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. And I, you know, I'm not the world's biggest hip hop fan. I'll say that. Like, I love hip hop, but not like I'm not an expert. I'll say that. But I went to Voodoo last year, Voodoo Festival, which is, you know, at the end of October, early November. And Macklemore came on right before Pearl Jam and they owned it. It was great. They blew me away. It was like super high energy and, you know, like 6-year-olds in the front row and 40-year-olds in the front row. And I'm excited about them being on this lineup.
Yeah. What about you, C-Pain?
I'm really excited for the Bonnaroo lineup. It's a really deep lineup this year. You know, you've got your Outkast at the top. You have someone intriguing like Elton John and Lionel Richie, some really interesting legacy acts who you really aren't seeing typically on a lot of these festivals that tend to recycle the same headliners.
Yeah.
Hopefully Jack White's his headlining set breaks out some White Stripes. That would really reel me in. And there's just like a lot of good like indie electronic stuff on the lower stages and just interesting stuff going on. A lot of other good hip hop acts, like Pusha T, for instance, playing Bonnaroo.
Sam Smith
is playing. Disclosure is also playing, so hopefully get a little collaboration there. There's just a lot of different fronts there with Bonnaroo.
Alex, what do you think, man?
I'm also very into Bonnaroo just because, you know, anytime you kind of are multi-generational like that and really have, you know, it's just a truly diverse lineup. So, you know, I'm into that. I'm of course always into Governor's Ball because it's in New York and I'm always fascinated by like the challenges of throwing a festival in New York. At the same time, I think the breakout festival of the year, to use a very Billboard-y term, is probably going to be the Mad Decent Block Party.
Oh, you think so?
I mean, just to have a group like Outkast. 2 years ago, I saw maybe three. You know, it was down at South Street Seaport. You could sort of just walk up to it.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm actually not sure where it's going to be in New York this year, off the top of my head. But you know, to have a group like Outkast is really huge. And you know, in some ways, it's not exactly a festival. It's sort of like a tour, really, but it's just the number of dates, the number of cities, it's all exploded. And it's sort of become this like huge bubble that's been growing and growing. And Outkast, I think, is going to be what just takes it to the next level.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think Firefly is definitely going to do something like that too. Now in its third year, I believe, with you know Foo Fighters at the top, Outkast as well. I think it's a huge win for Essence Fest down in New Orleans to get Prince. I mean, I think that they always kind of have some, you know, really great headliners. They had Beyonce last year. I think they had D'Angelo 2 years ago. So that's another big win for them. So out of the festivals, so for people listening, they want to know what the best all-around festival experience is. So out of the ones, I think, Jess, you've been to most of the major ones.
I think between you and I, we've been to most of the major ones, but I've never been to Coachella or there's a few I haven't been to.
Okay.
Or Bonnaroo. You've been to Bonnaroo and Coachella.
Yeah,
I've been to other ones. But I got to tell you, I've got a bias, and I know it. So okay. I'm going to tell you, like, there's a divide in the festival world. There is the city festival and there is the country festival. It's like the city mouse and the country mouse. And I am a city girl all the way. So I love a festival where you can like have a giant, you know, multi-stage experience, little bands to huge bands, you know, a huge spread and the full festival experience and then walk across the street and get a Starbucks.
Mm.
Lollapalooza, you know, to a smaller extent, Voodoo. I've been to ACL. That's a little bit farther out, but it's still in the city. You know, I mean, I like that experience because then you aren't sort of sleeping in a tent or schlepping somewhere to the middle of nowhere. And you can like have an interesting, like after parties at Lollapalooza have been fantastic. And that's a great sort of like cottage industry that like builds up around the festival as well and takes over the city in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. What do you think, C-Pain?
I want to give a shout out to the, atmosphere at Pitchfork Festival. It's a really user-friendly festival.
City festival.
Yeah, it's really affordable to begin with. There's only two main stages, one side stage, so three all together, so you hardly ever have to make tough decisions with overlapping sets. There's really great food there, and it's really affordable compared to lots of other festivals. It's a cool crowd.
Yeah,
good time.
No, I totally agree with you. Pitchfork Fest is definitely a favorite of mine. And the thing is, it you know, we're praising most of these festivals. It is easy to kind of get the atmosphere completely wrong. I mean, last year I did not have the best time at Made in America, just in terms of the food prices, how crowded it was. I mean, it had a great lineup, but it was kind of messy. And I'm sure, and hopefully it'll be back and better this coming year.
You went to 2 years of Made in America, though. Like, do you think that last year was like sort of like, how did it compare with the first one for you?
It was worse last year. 2 years ago was a little bit more manageable. I think they made it bigger and understandably so in 2013. But you know, they had people like Macklemore and Calvin Harris play their second stage. And it was just not, there was not enough room whatsoever. And it was just a madhouse. And, you know, and hopefully it'll get better this year. But I mean, I don't know about that setup.
Well, I mean, the thing about Made in America that's like fascinating, we talked about urban festivals. I mean, like, that's really as urban as it can get.
Oh,
it
yeah.
is literally
like squeezed
in the streets of Philadelphia.
Franklin Square
you
Park.
Know. Yeah, exactly.
Squeezed is the word.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so that, it will be amazing to watch that. See how that festival deals with that. I mean, I think the backdrop. I think it's great to have it in a place like Philly, which doesn't get a lot of love, and it's so easy to get to from New York and DC. But and obviously it's challenging, but it is like, to me, it's fascinating. Literally like on the street, that is where the festival is. So
yeah, and again, the past 2 years, the only 2 years it's been up and going, like they've had amazing lineups, and but just the setup itself has been very, you know, unruly. So before we end, I want to circle back to Coachella. Looking at this lineup, who do you guys think is someone that people should definitely, you know, find some time to catch, maybe aside from the Outkasts and the Arcade Fires and whatnot? What do you guys think?
Well, man, I have a couple, but you know, definitely Future Islands, I think could be a big story there. They're album singles is an amazing album that's sort of been spreading by word of mouth and sort of on blogs, and then they sort of had this very strange breakthrough moment on Letterman.
Yes.
With you know, if you've ever seen them live, they, you know, it's kind of shocking even when you hear the album to see them live, because the frontman, whose name I forget right now,
Sam Herring, yeah,
there you go, he is like an amazing presence. He's growling, beating his chest, dancing like sort of a muscular version of Molly Ringwald in the Breakfast Club would be the best way to put it. And
that's the best way to put it. All right. Yeah. All right,
or maybe not the best way, you know, but and it sort of became a show meme / running joke on Letterman. And so he's been, you know, playing the clip again and again. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are actually going to really go see this group.
And they're great, and live,
they're really good. I'm not even saying as a joke. I think
it became a joke.
It's weird, and then you actually get really into it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. What do you guys think?
I love the fact that Duck Sauce is playing. Like, that is so awesome. I mean, Big Bad Wolf a couple years ago. That was, I mean, like, that is sort of when I started paying attention to A-Track before that. He did a compilation for Nike that somehow got in my hands, and I've been obsessed with A-Track since then. But like, when he started doing the Duck Sauce stuff, I was all about it. And so I've never seen Duck Sauce. I've seen A-Track. Yeah. So I'm jealous of anybody who gets to see that.
Just to chime in, sorry, out of turn, but like their new album, Quack, comes out on Tuesday, April 15th, and it hasn't been getting a lot of momentum behind it, but it's actually like an incredible album, and I think seeing them at Coachella is going to be an amazing time. Like, it's just like an adrenaline rush, like party-starting album that is really hard to not enjoy.
Very cool. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I'm seeing this band Muse, so I normally don't see a fest. I'm kidding. I like Muse. They put on a great show. But anyways, Friday, the Replacements are playing Coachella, and I think it's only the third, maybe fourth show they've played in like 20 years since they reunited last year. I got a chance to catch their set out in Chicago at Riot Fest, so it'll probably be awesome because so many people have probably gotten into them since they broke up, so a lot of people will be seeing them for the first time, so that should be a great crowd.
Great point. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fun weekend. Before we wrap this up, Keith, you still there?
Yeah. Hey, yeah.
Chilling.
I know people are going to think, oh, you just patched him in later. Like, no. I've been listening to this entire thing. I'm fascinated by the duck sauce chat. Wait, they're playing at 5 a.m. according to the set list at Coachella.com.
Can a sunrise set. That sounds awesome.
That is incorrect, my friend. No, the curfew is at 1 o'clock, I believe. I think they're playing at like 10 p.m. on Sunday night.
Well, Coachella.com is wrong, then.
So Keith, yeah. How much do festival performances impact the charts? And when I say that, like, you see someone like Outkast, like Muse, like... Is them headlining Coachella, which is going to be, you know, live streamed on YouTube, how much is that going to move the needle in terms of album sales, single sales?
Nothing in the short term directly. No festivals generally cause any sort of immediate impact on the chart. What usually happens is that if you can secure a slot or you get, secure a significant slot at a significant festival, or you turn in a really amazing show that sort of goes, you know, viral-ish, it just basically expands your brand and it makes you more well-known, and that kind of pays off in the long run, but nothing in the short term. I mean, we could see things change going forward. You know, our Hot 100 chart includes YouTube data, so, you know, let's say an artist who's headlining one of these festivals that is being streamed on the internet or on YouTube could maybe splice out a specific performance, put that performance on their own official YouTube channel, and if their record label claims that as, you know, an official track, you know, YouTube will get the data, and we'll get the data, and then maybe it could impact the chart. But it really depends on the machinations of all that stuff and if anyone even bothers to do that, which I don't think anyone might. But we will see. The summer festival season is just getting started, so who knows what
just getting started. Well, cool. But before we wrap up, the last thing we got to do, man, Keith, your chart stat of the week.
Yes. You know, last week I said that I was going to like try to make it more contemporary.
Yeah, you had Fleetwood Mac last week and then Hall & Oates the week before. We were going old timey a little bit. Let's turn the clock forward a little bit. What we got this week?
Yeah, I'm totally not turning the clock forward, unfortunately. So 40 years ago this month.
40 years ago? That's
40 years ago, older than all the people in the room. What do you mean you're talking about? ABBA. ABBA performed on the Eurovision Song Contest 40 years ago this month and performed Waterloo and won the Eurovision Song Contest. And of course, that song contest thrust ABBA into the international spotlight, as they say. And well, it's been sort of a Mamma Mia history ever since. And what's really cool is that today, in 1977, on April 9th, when we're recording this, on April 9th, 1977, ABBA had their one and only U.S. number one Billboard Hot 100 hit with Dancing Queen. It spent 1 week at number one on April 9th, 1977. ABBA, of course, has charted a bunch of hits. They've actually charted 20 hits on the Hot 100 chart, but that was their only number one, and it's fitting that we can talk about their 40th anniversary as well as the anniversary of their first number one hit.
All right, so next week we'll be going 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70
Stop
years
it.
Ago.
No, ABBA was a good one. That's very key.
No, that was a great chart stat of the week. Thank you, Keith, for your chart stat of the week. All right, guys, we are done. Thank you again to Jessica Leckman, to Chris Payne, to Alex Gale, and, of course, to Keith Caulfield for the chart chat and the summer festival preview. We will be back next week with a Coachella wrap-up, actually a sort of a wrap-up of weekend one and a preview of weekend two. Keith, do you have any parting words?
I do not.
All right, so we will go out on Dancing Queen by ABBA. Thanks again and take care.